Welcome to the 2019 proxy season preview for Asia-Pacific markets. This session will largely cover markets in Southeast and South Asia, East Asia, and Northeast Asia. My name is Jeff Jackson. I'm one of the managers on the Asia team, and I oversee our coverage of markets in Southeast and South Asia. Collectively, that comprises 9 capital markets, ranging from Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Indonesia, but also include India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh. For these markets, 2019 looks to be a continuation of a dynamic set of years for both the Southeast and South Asian markets, mainly because we've seen a tremendous amount of change in regulation and adoption of new codes almost in every single market we cover, with the exception of Indonesia. This has been more the case for Malaysia, where they adopted a new code 2 years ago. Thailand adopted a new code in 2017, Philippines in 2016, and then Singapore adopted a new code this past year. For South Asia, India has been leading the way for significant regulatory change, which will see a significant overhaul of corporate governance practices in 2019 and then into 2020. Not to be outdone, its neighbors, Sri Lanka and Pakistan, have also adopted significant new changes in regulation or code, while Bangladesh as well has actually improved its regulations to enhance its board functions. In looking at the region, while there have been a number of notable changes, I want to focus today kind of on, or mostly on, a particular number of facets that we're going to see in this season, one of them being board gender diversity. Within the Southeast and South Asian markets, there's actually been a lot of leadership in trying to improve the amount of gender diversity on a board. For instance, in India, they were the first market in the region to mandate there be one woman on every board. Following Malaysia's adoption of its code in 2017, which took effect in 2018, companies that are deemed to be a large company, being a member of the top 100 index or market capitalization of 2 billion Malaysian ringgit or higher, are supposed to have a best practice of having a 30% women board. For us, in our evaluation of companies, where we are able to identify large companies, we will expect them to have a 30% women female, or I'm sorry, 30% women board. While many companies are taking a significant amount of time to meet this goal, we are still holding them accountable to achieving a 30% gender diverse board, where we find, for instance, that they are not making enough progress toward meeting that goal, then we will hold the nomination committee chair responsible for the lack of a sufficiently diverse board. Other changes we're going to see in gender diversity, one is going to be with India. From April, the top 500 companies by market capitalization will not just need to have one woman on their board, but that woman will need to be an independent director, which is actually a significant change, because while it is important to have a diverse, gender-diverse board, there was the issue of potential tokenism in terms of having just that one woman on the board who could be a family member of a board member. So this is actually a significant step forward in corporate governance practices, at least as it relates to gender diversity. Pakistan, too, mandates there being one woman every board. So given that there has been some notable changes in terms of mandating women on boards, we've actually expanded to other markets such as Thailand, Philippines, and Singapore, and for smaller companies in Malaysia, that we are expecting them to have at least one woman on their board. In the absence of a woman, at least one woman on a board, we will be holding the nomination committee chair responsible for a lack of a gender diverse board. So I think for us, this is going to be a new change across the Southeast and South Asian markets. And a lot of these changes, as it relates to our board gender diversity policy, were actually signaled in 2018 to be implemented in 2019. Moving on, director commitment is a topic that is seen and discussed globally. How many boards is a good number for a director to sit on? In Southeast Asia, we've actually seen a development of a new regional practice to cap or limit the number of boards a director can sit on to be around 5. This has either been by code or by regulation in markets that include Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines, and even Malaysia. While Singapore adopted its new code, it did not expressly put a cap on directorships, but given the regional practice, we were actually going to apply a 5-board cap for Singaporean companies as well, while we will generally expect that executive directors do not sit on more than 2 boards. So this is something that we're going to see how it plays out in 2018, and I think there are going to be a lot of companies that are going to get the message that a director's time commitment is really important. So for them, the fewer boards a director sits on is actually going to be beneficial in terms of their ability to be an active participant at board meetings. Other areas we've seen some notable improvements on include risk committees. Across Southeast Asia, we've seen some markets, have a mandatory adoption of risk committees. So this is, again, for the large companies in Malaysia, banks and financial institutions in Indonesia. The top 500 companies in India are supposed to have a risk committee from April. So aside from where there is a mandated requirement for a risk committee, we will display in our analysis, all companies, regardless of market, if they have a risk committee, and we will include that as part of our analysis. Of course, if there is a mandated requirement for a risk committee, then we will hold boards to establish in that committee. And if there is no risk committee, then we are going to, seek a really good explanation as to why. And if, there is an absence of this particular committee, we're going to look to see, that the board chair is held responsible for this particular lack of a board risk committee. Another area where, we are going to be focusing more on this year is actually independent director tenure. While some markets have had, tenure practices in place, such as India, which has a general limit on independent director of tenure of 10 years, Pakistan and Sri Lanka have a tenure limit of 9 years, and Bangladesh 6 years, we are extending board tenure limits to Thailand and the Philippines being 9 years. For independent commissioners in Indonesia, it's going to be 10 years. And for Malaysia, if an independent director is on the board for more than 12 years, we are going to affiliate that individual, mainly because these are best practices within the regions or market-specific codes. While Singapore's new code has a board tenure provision, that goes into effect in 2022. So at this point in time, we're not going to affiliate a director for serving in excess of 9 years. Rather, we're just going to note that they have been on the board for more than 9 years. For all other markets where a director, independent director, does exceed general board tenure limits, we are going to affiliate that director for the purposes of board tenure, as it is a best practice for companies to really begin to rotate and refresh boards. So this is an area that we are looking to see a lot of changes, particularly from this year. As 2018, we announced that we would be making changes for 2019, but we allowed for a one-year grace period for companies to try to adjust and perhaps find new independent directors that they know that they've had, some independent directors who have been on their boards for quite a long time. Lastly, in terms of disclosure, we are seeing improvements in overall meeting disclosure, annual report disclosure, and other related aspects of director disclosure. But I do want to highlight one particular area where we're going to see a noticeable change in terms of how companies are disclosing board skills. And this actually comes to the Indian market later this year, but we are expecting the top 500 companies to actually disclose board skills, a board skills matrix. This is notable because Indian companies generally haven't had good practices of disclosing director biographies, let alone the skills. While we encourage companies in other markets to also kind of develop better ways to disclose, board skills, India has taken the lead to actually have this as a requirement within their annual reports. So we're hoping to see some interesting disclosure as it relates to how Indian companies are going to disclose the relevant skills of their board, and if they actually apply them to the individual directors or if it's just on a board basis. Nevertheless, we are hoping that this will be but the first of several of the markets within Southeast and South Asia to allow shareholders to better assess the individual members of the board to ensure that there are sufficient skills to match or the requirements of a particular board. And then lastly, for India, we're going to see in 2020 a new requirement that will that will see the top 500 companies have a separation of the board chair and managing director, with the board chair being a non-executive director. This is going to be a very big change, which we may see beginning in this year, companies changing their articles of association or also changing their board structures. So this is an area to watch, so please stay tuned for that. In all, though, the Southeast and South Asian markets are very dynamic at this point in time. While there have been a lot of improvements in codes, we're hoping for further improvements in disclosure, particularly as it relates to remuneration. But I think for now, 2019 seems to be a promising year for a lot of continued change within this larger region.
My name is Du Tram. I'm the director of Asia Research at Glassfoot, covering mainly China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. I'm joined here with my two colleagues who will take turns talking about the main issue coming up in 2019 policy season. Maybe I will let them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Zachary Watson. I am a senior analyst for the China and Taiwan region.
Hi, my name is Catherine Sung. I'm a senior analyst for China and Taiwan.
Okay, so thank you, Zach and Kat, for joining us today. So we want to touch base on the key trends affecting board and share structure in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan. First of all, we have the environmental and social risk oversight issues. For this year, we update our policy and will carefully monitor a company's attitude towards material, environmental, and social issues. If it becomes clear that there's a mismanagement of this issue that could impact shareholder value, we may consider recommending that shareholders vote against members of the board responsible, and this will apply broadly in our China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan markets. And similar to what Jeff and John mentioned in their markets, we have the issue of board gender diversity. Kat will bring us some news about China view on the topic.
Yeah, thanks, Du. So for board gender diversity in China, improving diversity trends coupled with the State Council's advocacy of greater female representation on board leads us to believe we will continue to see an increase of potential female candidates for elections this coming proxy season. So over the past years, female representation on Chinese boards continues to improve. We believe that increasing gender diversity is a priority on the corporate agenda, and shareholder support for female candidates is continuing to gain momentum, while the female representation on boards will be slowly but steadily increasing in the long run.
And while compared to the other Asian countries, Taiwan has had comparatively better improvement in their board gender diversity, it still has a long way to go, with an only 3.5% increase in women representation on the board since 2015. In 2019, for Taiwan companies, we will not be making voting recommendations solely on the basis of the board diversity. Rather, it will become one of the many considerations we make when evaluating the company's overall oversight structure. In 2020, depending on other factors, including the size of the company and the industry that the company is operating in, as well as the general governance profile of the company, we may extend our recommendation to voting against the nominating committee chair of the board that governs over a board that has no female members. By making these voting recommendations, we will carefully review a company's disclosure of its diversity considerations and may refrain from recommending shareholders vote against directors when the boards have provided sufficient rationale for not having any female board members, or where boards have disclosed a plan to address the lack of diversity on the board.
Yes, last but not least, Hong Kong has taken a bigger step forward in promoting board diversity by releasing the guidance for board and directors on July 27, 2018. this guidance requires issuers to have diversity policy and to disclose policy or a summary of it in their corporate governance report. So Glassdoor would take into account this disclosure from company regarding their diversity considerations, and we will take it into consideration to recommend shareholders to vote against the nominating committee chair accordingly to promote gender diversity.
Yeah, so other than gender diversity, let's talk about share buyback programs in China. So following changes to Article 142 of the company law, which took place in October 2018, we have seen good momentum among companies to buy back their shares. As we look forward, we expect this trend to continue into the proxy season, where companies will actively buy back shares to alter their share structures and implement employee incentive schemes. We will continue to closely monitor relevant amendments to articles of associations as well. So examples will include expansion of scenarios where the companies may repurchase their shares and simplify the decision-making process of the board to implement such repurchase of shares.
Another thing we wanted to touch on is a trend in Taiwan with increasingly detailed disclosure being disclosed for the average Taiwanese company. Each season, we've been seeing a remarkable increase in English disclosures and the depth of the company's disclosure. Large cap companies previously in Taiwan sometimes didn't even disclose board biographies. And recently, there's been disclosures of things like skill matrices, more detailed biographical disclosures, as well as increasing English language disclosures. We expect this trend to continue, and hopefully this will allow us to increase both the depth and breadth of our analysis.
So up next are some regulatory updates for China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. So let's begin with China. In China, the CSRC, the China Securities Regulatory Commission, has published an updated version of its Code of Corporate Governance. So the code promotes, among other things, the implementation of state objectives and the Communist Party building in state-owned firms, and the adoption of the ESG and water city policies, and also the distribution of cash dividends and the limitation on the controlling shareholders' actions. It does not seek to replace any existing laws or regulations, but instead to provide additional guidance for change. We believe investors should be mindful of state enforcement and the potential of conflict. However, while the party building requirements highlight the difference between how companies operate in China and their Western counterparts, we believe most of the other provisions of the code appear to focus on improving Chinese regulation to provide flexibility and encourage innovation. So, meanwhile, in Hong Kong, as mentioned earlier, on July 27 of 2018, the Stock Exchange of Hong Kong has published the consultation conclusion and guidance for board and directors. And this consultation has provided several amendments to the listing rule, which will take place on January 1st, 2019, so as to enhance the corporate governance standards of listed issuer in Hong Kong. So together with this, this guidance and the consultation conclusion have proposed recommendations to board and directors on issue, including how to conduct an independent assessment of board members and maximum number of other positions that board member can reasonably balance. The code and the guidance have also introduced several advices and requirements, including the following, that we believe that should be viewed very critically by the market. First of all, we have the independent non-executive director time commitment. So from 2019, issuers are required to explain to shareholders regarding whether and why the independent non-executive director will be holding his or her seven or more listed company directorship. Glassdoor still thinks that seven or more is pretty lenient for independent non-executive director, and we do not believe that independent non-executive director would have the sufficient time commitment for
this many aboard, but we will as well also review case by case basis. But we will recommend shareholders to vote against independent non-executive director serving on more than four boards. And next up is the nomination process. The court and guidance also require that issuer need to include statements regarding the board nomination process about board perspective, skill, and experience that the nominee can bring and how the nominee would contribute to the diversity of the board. So third, the board, the chair of the board are required to meet annually with the independent non-executive director. While currently the chair is required to meet with non-executive director only, but now they are the chair is required to meet with only the independent director without the presence of any other directors. And last on the list was dividend policy disclosure in annual report, which requires sure to have a policy on payment of dividends, and this should be disclosed in the annual report. So those are basically the Hong Kong update in regulations.
So we also have a couple updates for the Taiwanese regulations. The biggest one was the Company Act update, which was passed by the Taiwanese legislature on July 6th of 2018. And it's the biggest update to the Company Act sort of in the recent past like 10 or so years. For the most part, the updates aren't going to have a huge effect on our voting, but it could affect some of the disclosures and some of the general sort of market activity of companies. So we want to go over some of the major changes that could affect shareholder interest. The first one is shareholder reporting. There will now be a requirement for a periodical submission of a report on shareholding statuses and other information regarding directors, supervisors, officers, and shareholders owning more than 10% of the shares. So this hopefully will improve general disclosure and governance. There is an additional amendment to dividends, allowing a company to distribute dividends quarterly or semi-annually. Another amendment states that shareholders who own more than 50% stakes in the company for no less than 3 months are eligible to convene a special general meeting. And this is a little bit controversial because some believe that this will kind of help balance out entrenched power, entrenched power interest in the company by allowing newer investors to call shareholder meetings. Others worry that it could lead to more fights over control and more instability in the market. And the last change we wanted to talk about is the amendment regarding the revoking of registration, where if a company entity is convicted for breaching the criminal code by providing falsified information, stakeholders may apply with the Ministry of Economic Affairs to revoke the company's registration. And this has been labeled as the SOGO clause and is specifically sort of aimed at an incident involving the Far Eastern Group chairman, Douglas Su, who has been involved in a shareholder rights dispute for more than 10 years over the controversial acquisition of shares and proprietary rights in Far Eastern SOGO. So I think that concludes our proxy preview and for 2019, and we want to thank everyone for joining us, and we will see you next year.
This recording should not be considered a solicitation of proxies by Glass Lewis. Glass Lewis has not sought permission to do so from the SEC, nor will it. This recording is for information purposes only and should not be construed as providing investment advice. In addition, Glass Lewis makes no representation regarding the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any statement of any of our speakers in this recording. If you have any questions, please contact us via our website, www.glasslewis.com.